They're sometimes clever and sometimes just typical rambunctious 7-year-olds. They run the gamut, but sometimes they have these moments where they have way more smart questions and insights into the topic than I do.
That's Jim Brunberg talking about his co-hosts on the Rome Schooled podcast. In episode 1, Jim tells us the premise of the show.
It's a new show about the pleasure of finding things out in person with a curiosity of a 6-year-old.
Dad, it's two 6-year-olds.
Okay, my twin daughters. And me with a skeptical yet tireless demand for real answers and real connections. So each episode starts with a question from my 6-year-old girls, Dana and Vern, and then goes deep on a topic.
You're listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
There's probably a lot more talk about farting than, there's definitely a lot more that doesn't make it into the episodes. But definitely the farting is a popular topic. We revisit that one a lot, and one of those, it grows.
Yeah. How many times do you think you sung that when we were in Wyoming? Or
a million?
Something like a million.
Now, Jim's podcast has been written up in The Guardian, The Atlantic, and The New York Times. Show is ongoing, and you can hear new episodes on romeschooled.com. My name is Gregory Day. You're listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast at pdxpodcast.com. Back to Jim.
I mean, I'm really lucky that I have these kids, first of all, and that their mom, Julie, lets us go out and do this, because a lot of people wouldn't allow that. I do have to prove up to the school district and to their mom that we're doing something worthwhile out there. And at first, the podcast was just because one of the girls was really sick of me working on other things. And
because you are a busy guy.
Well, I was working a lot, and I had I was at my computer all the time, but I wasn't letting them have screen time.
That's right.
I said, yes. No, you don't stay off the screen. And they immediately, I think at age 4 or 5, started to see the hypocrisy in that. And they said, you
clever,
can't.
Clever, these kids, they pick it up.
Right. Well, yeah, right. They aren't know. They really don't
they
get you away.
Up on
you
stuff.
Don't get away with anything. Once once you are trusted by them, they're not going to let you get away with a damn thing.
A while back, I noticed that we were spending a lot of time on the couch looking up answers to our questions. You know, kids have a lot of them. I'd have my smartphone in my hand or my iPad, and we'd go down a wormhole. And those amazing, addictive wormholes that we go down, they're great. But you don't get context. And you don't get human contact. And I have this gut feeling that this is where we really figure stuff out. We wanted to be immersed. So I looked in the paper and I bought an RV, an old Toyota Winnebago. It's kind of strange looking, like a turtle. It's got a tiny front and a huge back end that says Warrior.
Xena, the Warrior Princess.
So now we're on the road, roaming as much as we can.
First, we tried to go as far as we could, and we're not schooling you, we're not schooling the listener, it's more about us finding out about stuff, but we found that if we can share that in an entertaining way, and it's a lot more entertaining if the hosts are discovering it for the first time as well.
Right, you can hear that in your voice.
Your minds are being blown by whatever it is that you're talking to people about.
And these are heavy subjects, too.
Sometimes, yeah. You know, it's death and... we're doing two. We're in
Death,
the middle of two
gambling.
Episodes. Yeah, two episodes about
Taking
guns
risks.
Right now.
Yes, guns.
It kind of runs the gamut, and the kids, I think at this age, they're asking way deeper questions than we do because we're just used to it. Oh, we're going to
That's
another
true.
Memorial. We go to a funeral.
A childlike curiosity.
Yeah,
but they get deep.
They reframe
they make
it.
A question. You know why you do what you do. Why you think the way you do.
Why is there money? Why is there a funeral? Why is there this? You could get annoyed if you don't allow yourself the time, and I know it's a luxury, and I know that life is really busy, but if you can find a way to allow yourself a little exploration time, as I was lucky enough.
Exploration time, right.
And it could just be in the neighborhood. Or it could be, you know, taking a road trip where, yeah, you're trying to get to some sunshine. Get away from Portland.
I knew a musician in Portland, a really great musician. She had many careers, really, all at once. She was in radio programming, and she ran a couple of radio stations. She's an excellent musician, and of all things, a naked DJ. She took risks. A while back, she fell in love and moved to Vegas. And I figured she'd be good to track down and talk to for this episode. Come with us to Vegas and meet my friend, Shell Bailey. Her stage name, for many reasons, is Bombshell. And that's what Shell dropped on us right when we sat down to dinner.
It's not an easy decision, but I'm pregnant.
Really?
Yeah.
Right on.
I am going alone. So, you know, I'm going to be 44 next month. And, you know, I figure that by the time my child is 16, I'll be 60. I'm not going to stop living my life. So I'm going to do it.
DJ Bombshell was doing a stint of naked DJing and organizing parties, and also the spokesperson for
naked DJing,
which is a risky thing. But for her, that wasn't the risky thing.
Did not know that. Okay.
For her, that was no risk at all. To her, I mean, or so she says. She boldly will take off her clothes, and
it was a tough period in her life when you visited her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was unexpected. You could hear that.
Yeah, we didn't see it coming. We knew that she was in Vegas. We were passing through Vegas to learn a little bit about risks and gambling. We talked to some family of high wire trapeze people who are from Argentina.
I remember that. Yes.
They were amazing. And then we hung out with Shell for a while to just sort of get the lay of the land. And in the process found out that she was undertaking a huge risk, which is as a single woman in her 40s. She was pregnant.
Yes.
And was about to become a single mother, very consciously, a big decision, right? And so not something that 7 or 6 year olds at the time would have a lot of insights into, but the initial questions that they ask lead you down some very interesting channels.
In that episode also, Luke Burbank really opens up.
Were you surprised?
This is a friend of yours.
I wasn't surprised because I know Luke. He's an incredible guy. I understand how radio listeners would be surprised to see a side of Luke that's not quippy and constantly funny.
Right.
And truthfully, I can't remember which parts made it into the show because he gave us so many good stories and was so open about
his life. He talks about gambling in a way that I have not heard from an insider's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
The thrill and the fact that he gets a lot from it.
Yeah.
You never hear that.
Yeah. He's an observer of humanity. And I think I remember he told a story about a connectedness he has with these, I think they were Laotian women or that women from his neighborhood who go to or from the area that he lives in who go to the same. He always sees them at the same casino playing a certain game that they play and the joy that they get out of it and their little roller coaster ride and how he sort of connects with them on that level. And it sort of gives him a sense of the sameness between these incredibly disparate cultural people who would not normally meet up,
right.
Meet up on the gambling.
And he gets a lot from that.
Yeah, he does. He gets a serious joy from the risks that he takes gambling. And he's very he's really descriptive about it, and he's talked about it a little bit on his show Livewire, and that's how I knew him as I used to work on that show. But it's always a shorter time frame. He'll quip about it, but I knew that there was a lot more there. He gives us a good earful about it in that episode.
And do you ever get this protective urge as a father? I mean, when someone overshares or says something that you really do not want to expose them to?
It's usually the opposite. Yeah, that's a good question. That's a really good question. But usually people are sort of checking in. Can I say this in front of your kids? Can I say this in front of your kids? And I'm, for better or for worse, I'm erring on the side of overexposing them to real people and their stories. And I like to think that I make up for that by underexposing them to Mattel commercials or, you know, just the drivel that's flowing out of the television all the time. I'd rather have them hear it out of a human being's mouth, even if it doesn't have any more merit. Sometimes it's a story of violence. In this gun episode that we're working on now, there are a couple situations that I got myself into that I kind of wished that the kids weren't there. One, I actually asked the kids to go do something else. One was a conversation with two fellas who I know who both lost a brother to a gun accident. One to a suicide, and one guy had two brothers who shot each other accidentally. And so I didn't know where this was going to go, but it just, given the facts that were on the table, I didn't want my girls to distract these guys from being able to talk about it openly, and I didn't want them to have to hear this incredibly grief-stricken tale until I had a chance to hear it first. But other than that, usually people are a little more careful than I want them to be in front of the girls. Can I say this in front of the girls? Can I cuss in front of the girls? Yes, you can cuss in front of the girls.
The naked DJ, you were fine with that?
Oh, yeah, no problem with that. I think that they choose their path, and I don't particularly want them to be naked DJs, but they see what happens there. Without judging, and I think they'll make their own choices given the wide array of people whose lives they're seeing.
So. And the kids are getting older. They're getting smarter.
We might have to borrow some young kids. The nature of the show's changing a little bit because of that. And so they're turning 8, and we're going to go talk to expatriates to explore what it's like to leave your country. Because we've talked about immigration, and then we're going to talk about emigration from an American standpoint and talk to some expatriates, young and old, who are living down in Mexico. So it'll be our first – well, we went to Canada, but this will be our first –
Like Americans living in Mexico?
Americans and other people who have left their country for one reason or another.
You sort of feel like you're stuck between the two. You don't really feel like you're – like I don't really feel like I'm English. I don't feel like an American.
I'm so tempted to start asking you questions right now.
Constantly.
But the girls aren't here, or else we would be interviewing you.
Yeah.
They're
going to have a bigger role then in the show, I would assume.
They do. They have a much bigger role now. It's interesting. I don't think
as the show's developed, they've become more part of the show.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
More and more questions.
Yep, because they know how to answer. On their own, they've learned how to ask follow-up questions. They know how to get people talking. They're better at it than I am.
They're going to be on KBTV in the future.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. They love it. They're better at it than I am.
That's great.
At the interviewing. I feel awkward and I overprocess and I'm thinking things through on a million grown-up levels that sort of censoring myself. But
I'm
they
glad
just
to
sort
hear
of,
that, that
bam.
I'm not the only awkward guy doing an interview show.
Hooray for the awkward radio hosts.
I think that makes it better. Wow. And, okay, and you do all the music for the show or the majority of the music?
Well, it's me and Ben. Wonderly.
It's you and Ben.
It's me and Ben. Ben Landsverk.
Right. Wonderly?
Wonderly.
Yes.
It's our duo, and we do normal sort of singing and playing kind of stuff, but then the other half of what we do is the soundtrack stuff. And so I edit the show without music to just try to get the story straight. And then, as you said, when I put the music in, after it's been laying there naked for me, and I put the music in, and all of a sudden it's like going from black and white to color. So since we've been doing the show for these episodes, and
it's a great way to put it.
We have a lot of reject music from other projects that we've done. So we have like we have several hundred short pieces of music that are less than a minute long that we've done for different, like we do all the audio, all the music for the New York Times podcasts, like The Daily and Still Processing, and we do Dear Sugar.
Not too shabby.
It's a good gig, but we end up having all this great material. Well, it's great to us that's been rejected by them.
Yes, yes.
But they'll choose one and then say, okay, but the rest of these five, we don't need those, so they're ours again. But we wrote them and our hearts were in them, so they're sort of emotional landscapes that we can use. And sometimes I'll go back in and tweak them, remove some elements, or stretch them out. And they end up weaving into the show, and those are the colors. That's the palette. So those are the other voices in the show. I wish I had time to do more music for the show. I mean, I've always loved concept albums and things like that, but I honestly don't think that people really listen as closely. Most people don't listen as closely as you did. So it's, I don't want to bore people by having sort of this extended soundscape concept music thing that has a story behind it. That I think the days of that are gone. I think we've sort of moved on and our attention spans have gotten shorter to the point where you just, music has a different role in things now. Like we're doing this project with the New York Times and Snapchat right now where every piece of music that we're submitting to them is exactly 10 seconds long. Not 9.8, not 10.2, but 10 seconds long. So we have a plethora of rejected 10-second pieces that we think are just genius. Those will start showing up on Rome School.
How do you find time to do this? Because you're a busy guy. I mean, you founded Mississippi Studios, Revolution Hall. Hmm. I'm not sure what your day-to-day role is. And you get to do this podcast, and you're creating music, you're in a band, you're traveling, you're touring.
You make it sound like much more than it is. Not really touring.
And you're raising two children.
I don't like touring. I did touring all through the 90s, and it was, did my share of that. You generally sing the same songs every night, load the same gear into venues, and it's a fun time, but it's kind of repetitive. And now that I've got kids, it's not the world for them.
Right.
I mostly spend time with my kids and working on Rome Schooled and working with Ben and Lydia, who's Lydia Ritchie is the other producer of Rome Schooled. She's in Philadelphia to sort of up the concept and work with related concepts. We have a company called Assembled that has to do with people getting together in person. And it ties together, you said Mississippi Studios and Revolution Hall.
Assembled?
Assembling people, getting people together in person to talk about things is the basic idea. And I'm not particularly social. I don't like go to a lot of parties, but I do think that when people are working on something, they're a lot more productive and they're going to share a lot more if they're in person. So we have this concept called Assembled. Rome School, the basic concept is to go out and talk to people in person about things, although we've done a couple phone interviews out of necessity. She has a concept called the Pod Clubs, which is to take people out of their earbuds and to get them talking about podcasts in a book club type situation. So it's book clubs for podcast listeners. That's her sort of Assembled idea. We're helping produce a movie with James Westby now called At the Video Store, which is the whole idea is the loss of the brick and mortar video store community where you go in and you talk to people in person. Hey, what are your favorite movies? Oh, here's a box. I can pick it up and hold it in my hand and look at it and show it to the clerk at the counter and say, hey, is this a good movie? That's all part of the Assembled ethic.
Matt Clark will talk your ear off about that.
I want to meet that guy. I've only talked to him briefly. We have this planned thing with James on that. But to answer your question, I'm not as busy as it may seem because in person I have been able to cajole.
Love Mississippi Studios.
So who runs it is I built it. So years ago I was busy building it. And when Revolution Hall was being built, I was super busy. I was on my hands and knees replacing all the seats in the auditorium.
A bigger venue.
Hanging the speakers and everything. But now it runs itself because there are these amazing people. Ray Mullen, our general manager, and Sophie, our food and beverage person. And we have people in charge of every department that are way more talented than me in doing it. Matt King books all the music at Mississippi Studios, and Mark Adler and Matt King book the music at Revolution Hall. So I occasionally am called in to be a tiebreaker on something, and I go in and do a little bit of quality control, and I call myself the mermaid on the vessel. I'm just sort of – I go in and try to keep the vision on course, but it's a broad course. It can go this way. I mean, I never thought that Mississippi Studios would have the type of music curation that it has. I opened it up as a more of an
Almost
Americana.
Almost everybody I talk to cites it as one of the places they want to see a show because it's not too big. It's not too small.
It's a comfy size.
Yes, yep. It is.
I just knew that I wanted it to sound good, but I didn't know that it would be indie rock. You know, so I kind of thought that indie rock was dying out, but then all these amazing new bands came to the surface, and Matt King finds stuff that I would never find. And he does his research, and he's passionate about it, and he loves it, and half the stuff that comes through I've never heard of. I'll be honest. I'm that irrelevant in the music world. But that said,
Revolution Hall. Too.
Yeah, same story there. I mean, I recognize the artists and much more familiar with most of the artists that play Revolution Hall because that's an 840-seat hall. And when you get to that many butts and seats, you have sort of a more sustained perennial presence on the music scene. So people right. who play there aren't usually just brand new bands. They usually have been around for a couple of years. And I've had a chance to have them show up on my radar. But to answer your question, I'm I seem a lot more busy and accomplished than I am.
And you have your children...
Half the time.
Half the time?
Yep, half, half okay. the time. Yep. Their mom lives in Camas and with a wonderful guy, Dave, and they both are very tolerant and flexible about scheduling so that when something comes up and Rome schooled, me and the girls are going to drive to South Dakota or something, she always finds a way to make it work, which is just great. She's a school teacher, and so taking the kids out of school, you would think that she would have some strong opinions
about
that.
Talk about this, yes.
But she's been great.
And you were on TV with the children.
Yep.
Yes. Can you tell me about that experience? You seemed really happy.
I was nervous. It was one of the. So we got invited to go down and do a television appearance, which is great. And I thought I was nervous for myself, and I was nervous for the girls. But I was way more nervous, as it turns out, than they were. They were cool cukes. They just they held their own, and I just kind of nervously stood behind them, and my lips stuck to my teeth because my mouth got dry, and I was just sort of smiling, but nervously.
I mean, you were there in the studio, so you
and
really
it was live,
home, right? Yeah, it was live.
Yeah, and I shouldn't have been nervous because I've spent plenty of time in front of people. It's just that I was overthinking. I was thinking, well, here are my children. I'm exposing them. That visually people can see who they are now. The radio has a layer of anonymity. You can keep being a person walking around, and nobody's going to recognize you no matter who you are. I don't even, you know, until recently I didn't know what Ira Glass looked like. You know, I've been avoiding it. Right. When I was a kid, I remember not wanting to know what Garrison Keillor looked like. And I was very sad when I found out what he looked like. He didn't look anything like I thought he would look. I thought he would have he was a gnome-like little man with a beard. No, he's very, very tall and not very smiley. But anyway, yeah, the TV thing made me nervous because I was thinking about all the different things. Like, do I want to expose my kids to exposure on the boob tube or not? And I was just thinking about all this stuff. But they were just great. They were
natural.
Are you
going to meet Ira when he comes to town this year?
He's coming in June. I don't have any plan to, but I'd love to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't know if he's heard the show. I mean, I don't know if he's...
The show, okay.
Getting out
Can
there
you
and...
Can you tell us about the success of Rome Schooled? Can you brag a little bit for us? Because... The numbers are good.
I just love the show that we're making.
And it's doing well.
It seems to be doing okay. I mean, I honestly don't know. I don't look. I promise. It sounds cheesy, but I don't look at the numbers. I guess I'll have to start looking at the numbers at some point when I need to go into a boardroom and tell somebody something. But right now, it's something that I make with my daughters, and it's an honor and a shock and a surprise that people – like The Guardian and The New York Times and The Atlantic have noticed it and written about it. But I think it's not...
Storytelling. It's storytelling.
Yeah. Well, that's it. We're trying to...
In a documentary-style format.
Yep.
That is hot. That is what people want to hear.
It takes a lot of work. So I think that...
Yes, it does. You can hear that.
There are the shows that are out there that I know about that are doing it.
They have a big production team.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they have a big production team, or sometimes it's just a guy like me. I mean, I stay up all night trying to piece this show together, to find the right music and the right bits of the interview, and I'll recut an interview 10 times to make sure that I'm trying to get...
I can hear that, and I really appreciate that.
You know what it takes. It's just a lot of sitting there, unfortunately, at a laptop.
Yep.
You know, the tape doesn't cut itself. You have to sit there and stare at the screen and really find, when did he say that thing about the trapeze? And you just have to piece it all together in the right way. That's what I can brag about, is that I think that I've put the work in to making it into a good show. I feel like people like at Radiolab do the same thing. Ira, in curating his producers and keeping This American Life to be such a great, continually relevant show.
Now let's do it every week.
It's an amazing show.
It's the gold standard.
Yep. I think The Daily, incredible, incredible show.
The Daily.
The New York Times' new news show. It's very in-depth. It's a 15 to 20-minute show daily that they make that has soundscapes, collages. It's an incredibly put together thing with lots of production, and I know that only a few people are working on it. Michael Barbaro and Lisa Tobin and Andy, I can't remember his last name at the moment, but there's three people just working their tails off to make this happen. It's just hours and hours of putting it together. And it's just like when you talk to filmmakers like James Westby, it's not about being in that director's chair and having the magical overture gesture to direct your actors at the moment. It's really about all the work that it takes in post-production to find the right pieces and get them to work with each other. I wish everybody could not stress as much and play a little harder, take more chances. And I know that sounds like I'm coming from a place of privilege when I say that. I know that people aren't in a position. They've got to get up and go to work and everything. But if, I mean, the people who I talk to, especially in the scope of this show, who are doing a job and have a notion to maybe explore a career change or something that might just shake up their lives a little bit, I always encourage them to do it. Because if they're thinking about doing it and if they're not happy where they are, they're bound to find something, find some sort of alternative out there.
It's worth the risk.
There you go.
Thank you so much, Jim. That was great talking to you today, really.
Well, I don't want to be like a, it's not a self-help show, and I'm not a self-help guy, but you...
It turned into that, I think.
It turned into that.
And I love that.
Because I know I'm talking to a person who is doing a very, you've made this thing happen for yourself, and... It's not easy. Can I swear on this show?
Yeah, yeah,
it takes
sure.
a shit ton of work, Greg.
Yeah.
But it's so worth it. It's worth the risk and it's worth the work. I think this is a healthy compulsion. Yeah. Maybe not in terms of getting enough sleep all the time or keeping your friendships balanced, but you got to do what you got to do that. You got to live the dream a little bit.
Even got to do, sense. Man. Yeah. Thanks again, Jim. This
yeah,
was
thank
great.
You, Greg.
This
yeah, it was really good talking to you.
Oh, I finally figured out that FM dial. Was that the cheesiest transition ever, possibly? My name is Gregory Day. You've been listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast. We will be here next week. I have a very, very surprise guest. Have a great one.
Did you hit the red button?
I did. We're already recording.
That's the thing I always forget to do is to hit the record button. I'll start talking to somebody and they'll say the most profound thing. And I'm so excited. And then I look down.